Mr. Verreel 16, we're talking about your time in Austria. When you first got there, what tasks had you been given?
Well, when we first got there, we moved to, I think a place called Bleiburg was the first place we went to. And then to move on, the partisans and the Yugoslavs were occupying, we moved into Austria. And they were more or less occupying part of it. More or less saying, this is our bit, we have it. And we were moved, this is, at that time, I thought, oh no, you know, because we're passing these chaps, and we're out to the teeth, and they didn't care about how they shot the guns off, you know. And they were dug in, and this sort of thing. I thought, well, this would have, the war finished, we've got through it, and we're going to have to, I'm going to get shot with one of these now, after all, you know. And it worried me did that, but we moved into Jugendberg, call it. And they were, as I said, they were there dug in, and they weren't moved, and all this sort of thing. And our job was to shift them there. And with rock tanks and that, as far as I remember. And fortunately, they decided they'd moved out, and they moved back through into Slovenia, Yugoslavia.
Did you get involved with the situation between the Titoites and the Croats at this point?
No, I didn't as such. We did come across a pile of weapons that had been dumped by them. In fact, I got a Mauser P-38, I think it was. And I know there'd been a lot of somewhere. I think I don't know if the Croats had been shot or something like that by the Serbs or the other way around, because of course the Croats were recognised by the Germans. Although the chap I was in hospital with had his leg off, I mean, he was a Croat, so he wasn't part of the Germans. So I don't know, really, a bit of a mix up there, like, anyway, isn't it? But I know the Croats were pro-German, so just what did happen, I don't know, but I know there was some trouble between them, and there was a lot of them were shot, which side, I don't know. But I can't remember actually, I was going to see anything like that. As I say, I saw sort of the aftermath, I saw this pile of weapons that had been disarmed, or some of the little crop that had been disarmed by the Serbs, or I don't know. I can remember that, but I can't remember much else about what did happen exactly.
So the Titoites, in effect, the partisans, they ultimately moved. You thought you're going to have to get into a fight situation.
They moved back at Yugoslavia. Yeah.
Presumably they took Croats with them, who'd probably fled from them.
Oh, yes, they would do, yeah.
But you didn't get involved in that side of it.
Whether any of the other companies did, I don't know, but I can't remember our company involved in that.
Wasn't it here that there were a lot of horses running wild and you got involved with that?
Well, that was, we moved then to a place called Brutal in anyway, a place called Brutal, and we disarmed a brigade of Cossacks, and there were Cossacks that were doing fighting for the Germans, and they were all horsed, cavalry, and our part of it, our company, we were in Brutal, we had to make a camp to keep them in. And it wasn't one much of a camp, they could have got out quite easily, no barbed wire, it was just more or less, I think it was like a timber yard, and all it was just a bit of a wood fence, they could have walked out into it. But we had to tell them that they were going to Canada, you see.
Was this an order?
We always used to say that they asked that we were going to prisoners of war in Canada.
Did you get some of them actually asking you what was happening to them?
Well, they were worrying what's going to happen to them.
So you
back to the Russians, you say.
And you had to say.
And you Canada.
And did you believe they were going to Canada yourselves? With
no, I think we knew. I think we knew because it was arranged what was going to happen to them. Well, we didn't know what was going to happen to them, but we knew that they were going to be handed back over to the Red Army because it was arranged who took them. We didn't transport them. We just looked after them in this camp. The actual transportation, I think, was carried out by the Bradford. At the 70th Field Regiment, which was adapted to the service, which was our field artillery. And I think they provided the transport to transport them. We more or less looked after them. As I said, this is where the horses came in. Everybody had a horse.
What were they like, these Cossacks? You'd obviously see them very often.
There were a lot of them were dressed in the seed Cossacks with the cartridge thing on the pockets and stuff, and the astrakhan hats. Some of them were just like that. Although they did have, a lot of them had the like a German uniform and the astrakhan hats, but they still had the German eagle and But some, perhaps it was the opposite, I don't know, but they were full rig out, women with them as well.
Were they easy to get on with?
We didn't really get on. All we did with them was search them, put them into this camp. That's all. And just guard them. We didn't sort of. Because they started shipping so many off each day.
Did they come in voluntary or did you have to go seeking them?
Oh, no, they came in voluntary. It was just a matter of it was a brigade that was there. They must have surrendered. And we just disarmed them. And took the horses off them. And put them in the cage. See, they had the regimental band with them and everything else. We used to play the regimental band and the choir. And in this camp, we used to they thought we were at the Canada. You see.
And, did you yourselves feel or have any thoughts that what might happen to them? You know, you said you're going to hand them over.
Didn't know nothing that time. I mean, no, we just thought they'd be handing back over. At the time, I thought, well, it serves them right then. Yeah, they're traitors to the whole country, sort of thing. We didn't realise what was going to happen to them. I mean, we did find out as the time went on, because some people had said that the guns set up there and they were shooting all down to the side or something like that straight away, and the rest pushed them back to finish up in camps, didn't they?
You didn't hear any gunfire?
Well, we were nowhere near them, you see. We didn't go with them. We just were at this camp in the village of Brooklyn. And the demarcation line between the Russians and the British was a few miles away, you see, the bridge. And this is where they were handed over, at this bridge. So all we did was supervise them at this camp. And they brought the vehicles each day, they got them on and then drove them away. And the flash we saw them.
And you say they had women with them as well?
Women, whether they were nurses, and like army nurses and that sort of thing. It was like a complete unit really, I suppose. Not while they organised their units, but whether these nurses normally travelled with them or what, I don't know.
Did you meet any Russians?
One or two, but not been able to understand it. There was only one really that I could have spoken to, and that was in Vienna. And he wanted to talk, and we were just going out somewhere looking for something, having a drink, so we didn't entertain him. So he was really the only one that I could have sort of. He called to us. Well, we were actually just outside our barracks, we were in the hospital. And he was coming out. He must have sort of gone there purposely, hoping to talk to some of us. And I wish I had him. He'd just call out to us, a cup of tea or something. I don't know, I want some beer. And we carried on, you see. But the other ones, they didn't. I don't think they were more or less allowed to threaten any of us. We had a football match. We did have a football match between us and them, but even that, there was a lighter truck with their Tommy guns there, lighted around the pitch, you know, weren't very friendly. In fact, the probably they'd have liked to have done, this chap I was telling you about, he must have come out of his way after their zone, more or less, especially to hoping to talk to someone. The rest of them, they more or less were afraid to, I think they were afraid to talk to him. They were more more bothered about looting and stuff like that, yeah. Bit rough. A lot of them were just like peasants, really, you know. Even the opposite, not much different.
Had the non-fraternisation rule gone by now?
I think while we were at Brutal, I think it would. I mean, we were billeted in a police, the village police chief. We were billeted in his house with two daughters, and that's how we used to talk to them. And I think it went at that time. I don't think it lasted that long, really. I don't think it could have done. I mean, you couldn't expect people to, not British, to go so long without, you know, being friendly, really. But it must did last pretty long, I should think. Can't just say how long, but.
And obviously, over a period of time, you become more friendly with the civilians in your area.
Oh, yes. Yes, you did. Yeah.
Did they invite you to their homes when you were able to go?
Well, I knew I got to know a girl there, I was to go to her house, well, her friend's house. she'd been married, she was only 19, then I was only about 22, something like that. And just got friendly with them when it was curfew, actually, and got them after curfew, but nice to see them later, and got friendly that way. And we were in the sergeant's mess in this was a place called Steins, actually. Where we used to go to the did a swimming up there, swimming bath there in this village, and we used to go there, and it was for British troops only between certain hours. And then the remainder of the village when it was we still went as well, like, so it was like mixed then, and you sort of the other people over there.
Were they well cared for, the Austrian civilians? Had they looked after themselves? Was it a good area?
Well, the area we were in, it was just a small country area. We weren't in any. The nearest city was Graz, I think. And I never went there, once, I think. So I don't know what it was like there, but in the country, this where we were at Stiles, it was just a small place. And they all seemed okay.
Can we go back to your horses with it running around? You did horse patrols, did you not?
Yeah, well, as I say, we got all these horses and confiscated them and just took them. And everybody said, we all had one, but we didn't have to look after them. We just put them in the field at night and stood with the saddle on. And no, I had one. And, I mean, there's some now, pretty lovely horses. The only thing is, they only understood Russian. If you told them to stop, they didn't. Just carried on. I would run away with me, and right down the road for miles at one point, I couldn't get it to stop. And eventually, they took them off us. And a lot of them were given to farmers. They were branded with broad arrow, I think, to put on it. You know, veterinary corps came on, and the veterinary corps. And they sorted them out. And we were allocated so many, and they formed a hospital. Well, a chap had been in, must have been in the cavalry, Captain Mine here, they called him, and he was more or less in charge of the horses. And you could sort of volunteer to go on a riding course if you wanted. So I was volunteered. To be up about 4 o'clock in the morning to see to horse first. And see horse, book the horse out and all this sort of thing before you had your own breakfast. Then you had to go back and groom them and then burnish all the harness and polish the saddle and all this sort of thing. And then you eventually got a riding lesson. And it was usual cavalry style, you know, wait to ride without stirrups and that sort of thing. I would love when it were finished. Then at night, you'd say, again, you'd see if it horse, bend the horse down and look after the horse for you before you looked after yourself. Anyway, then they started with horse patrols. Horse patrols and mules. But they started sending patrols out into the hills and that sort of thing. I can't just remember what the purpose was. But everybody was after, you know, they're all for it to win out, like, get away for a change. With horse races, organised horse races with these horses. And with the talk, having it with the talk, all this sort of thing, and his favourite jockeys that we thought were good jockey with a bloke in our company that had been a jockey or something, and we're back to him. But yeah, it was just quite a nice time with it, really.
Did you get involved in searching for SS and Nazi people?
Well, this was partly, I was telling you about these patrols that we used to go out. They'd give you lists of names. Now, you didn't know really who they were or what purpose they were being brought in for. And the main battalion headquarters ever was a place called Wilden, or Velden. Wilden, I think. W-I-L-D. I think it was Wilden. And then a prison there, or a lockup. And we used to have to, as I said, they'd give me a list of names and where the villages were, where they lived. And took 1,500 weight on this chap, this German. And he just set off, it might be 59, up into the wilds, up into the hills. You get to the nearest village and dig the burgomaster out, see. First of all, so these chaps, where do they live? And they tell you. Man, you might have a long walk. You keep asking folk where they are from. And as I say, you'd round them up and tell them to bring the razor and comb, towel and that sort of thing, come along with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know what. Must have interrogated them or getting them for interrogation or something like that. We never took them back, I think we must have found our own way back, I don't know. But that was a nice trip out as well. I used to enjoy that, You might sort of go for half a dozen of them in the day at the time. And the rest of the time we just do a bit of lumberjacket, cutting trees down, stocking wood up, taking my firewood, and dog and stick walks. That sort of thing, just nice gentle duties and all that. Swimming in the afternoon. It was quite pleasant there.
Where did you go to next after Wilden, you said?
Well, Wilden, I wasn't actually stationed in Wilden. Wilden was just the battalion headquarters. We were at Steins. And while we were at Steins, we went from Steins to Vienna when the battalion went to Vienna on guard for 6 weeks. Yard duties.
When would this be?
This must have been about, I think it must have been about October 1945.
So the Japanese war was also finished now?
Well, that would finish it. Oh, well, when the war finished in Europe, some of them had to start training them to go to Japan. To fight the Japanese. Anybody with under 2 years service abroad had to were expected to go. Anyway, it didn't happen that because by August it finished, didn't it? So they didn't have to do it anyway. But there were a lot of people willing that had done less than 2 years abroad thinking they were going to have to start fighting the Japanese. Yes, it was over then. We moved to Vienna to take over guard duties from the Americans. It used to be like Berlin before the French rotated. And we took over from the Americans. And I was on advance party again there. And we had some German prisoners, which were taking them with us as labourers, sort of thing. And of course, from the British zone to cross, it was like Berlin again. Vienna was right in the centre of the Russian zone. So we had to cross a lot of no man's land, as they say. So to these German prisoners were to shove them right at the front of the truck inside, that they'd been there, and pile all our kit in front of them so that they couldn't be seen. As we pulled up, stopped for these, looked like Mongolians, so they pulled us up at the checkpoint, looked all in. I didn't see Germans, they pulled them out. So that's how we got to Vienna. Yeah. And I was on a dance party, and we got there at night, just getting dark. There was a hospital that we were going to be billeted, the battalion was going to be billeted in. So we couldn't do anything that night, it was getting dark. So we all went into one empty ward, with beds in, hospital beds. And these are like biscuits, three cushions sort of thing. So we bedded down for the night there. Until the night, you know, waking up, people striking matches and thought no more about it, I went back to sleep. Anyway, when I woke up next morning, it was daylight, and when we got up, and so what was all the commotion? I said, what, didn't they bother you? I said, what? It's bugs. They'd all come out of these beds. And there was what they were striking at, and all these piles of them out in the corridor. It never bothered at all. Oh, I said, no, through the hell. I said, we're bitten to death with them. Anyway, what we had to do, then we had to get these Germans that would help us, and we had to organise who was going to sleep where when the battalion came, which platoon was going to be in which ward, you could say. So we had to get the beds in and all that sort of thing. So we had to knock these beds from together. They were the old type bed with a knuckle dropped into the bed head. And as you were knocking them from together, there were these bugs dropping out. What it must have been like for the wounded that had been in there, because it had been a hospital for wounded. I don't know, but they were all over the walls flattening in the different wherever we went. And to get the medical corps came from the DDT and sprayed all out and all that sort of thing. And that's when I could have got a Leica camera for 200 cigarettes and I hadn't any with me. I'm glad they were German soldiers, ex-German soldiers. But the camp, the life one, was the best camera you can get out of it. And I didn't understand them anyway. I said, what do you want? And how much do you want? 200. I mean, it's cigarettes we couldn't sit in. Couldn't sit in more than money. And I said, I haven't got any, because I ran our dance party and there was no way I could get any. So, anyway, when the old restaurant came, I think one of the officers got it, I think, 200 cigarettes. But the battalion came, as I said, they followed us on, once we got them sorted out. And then we started on guard duties.
Was this a real army-style, peacetime British bull?
Oh, you had plenty of that, yes, because you were there, you were going to be on guard. It was nearly all guard duties. There were various places where you did guard duties. You had various, duties of somewhere escorting the Austrian police round on the beats to protect them from the Russians, sort of thing. There were duties on the Palace of Justice, the Black Supreme Headquarters, I think it was Marshal Korniev, that was the Russian, the role of the Supreme Headquarters, sort of thing. With a guard on there and guard on different things. But my LEAP came through then. I leave, month's leave. So I left, we'd only just nicely got there, when I left Vienna and I came back to Milan, and waited to wait there, and we got the train. And then we got the train from Milan back to Switzerland and back home for a month's leave. And I got back there. I got back in Austria, just over the border from Italy, the week before Christmas. So that was the week, it was out there, Peter St. Nicholas or something like that. And it was just going around with masks and that sort of thing. So that must be just before Christmas. That's what it should be in the tender then.
So your parents would have been very excited at coming home.
Yes, they were. Yeah.
What about the neighbourhood and the street? Did they put anything on for you, friends?
Well, not really, no. Some of my friends had already been demobbed before me because they joined earlier than I had. They'd been 17, actually, given the wrong name, wrong age. So they were out, they'd come out before me with their children. All the neighbours, of course, were out because you knew everybody in those days. I mean, they were the same people that had been there when you were kids. So they all knew you and made a big fuss. But there were no black eyes out or anything like that. They just came home on the tramp, up Leeds Road on the tramp and that said. And, they were pretty happy to see, can't they? Trouble is, I couldn't settle in the house. I couldn't settle in the house or walking about. And I didn't know what to do with myself for long enough. Yeah. Even the bed stank too soft. And,
and you say it was a month's leave?
Yes.
And then you went back to rejoin the battalion?
I went back to Austria then. By that time, they'd come from the outward Vienna. They'd come back to Schloss Allerheiligen, I think they called the place, big castle. Our company was in this castle, our companies were different places. And at Christmas, that's right, we're back to Christmas, because we entertained all the children from the village children came up, the little ones. And we made a party for them, and they all came up with the teachers, and they all sung for this silent night, and we gave them oranges that we had never seen for years, and chocolate. One of Sergeant Ryan, called him, lived in Bradford, he got dressed up as, he died, I think, last year, Father Christmas, he got dressed up as Father Christmas, and gave him all the presents and that. Quite pleasant. And that was Christmas. Then, after Christmas, I was supposed to be going on a snow course. Got around my gear, my skis and my snowshoes and clothes and all that sort of thing. Used to go on ski courses and all that sort of thing. And then I was called into the company office. And by this time, I knew that the battalion was going to be disbanded. We were a disbanded battalion. And I was called at the company office, and I saw that they'd been received notification asking for me release on Class B. Class B release, which was for my job on the railway. So I didn't want to take it. So, as I say, I knew the battalion was being disbanded, so I said yes. Otherwise, I don't think I would have done, but I took it. So in the February, I came home. I was demobbed in February.
Where were you between the time the battalion disbanded and February? Did you go to Greece with the
enemy? No. The battalion was still in Austria when I left. I went down to Villach. And I came home by train, and from there